The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, September 10th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. So much to get to on the show today. Carrying over from yesterday, my goodness, we have not had that many phone calls, that much engagement. I've been telling people, I don't think it's been that crazy on the phone lines since the Hugh Freeze hiring news broke on this very show when that day came. I mean, that was a crazy day for sure, but yesterday was wild. It was up there, and Uncle T-Bone and I had a fantastic time, and while it was fun, I hate that that's the conversation that we're having to have. And don't worry, it's gotten even spicier. It's gotten even juicier since we were on the air less than 24 hours ago. And we're going to have more on that today. More conversations, more breakdown on the show about what Hugh Freeze said in the press conference yesterday, what he said or what he didn't say last night in Tiger Talk, because apparently journalistic integrity is not a thing anymore. So we have that to cover on the show today. And plus just more takes, more thoughts on what the heck happened on Saturday and what do we do moving forward. So a lot of that on the show today, and as always on Tuesday afternoons, joining us in the studio, the voice of Lee Scott Academy, Christian Griffin, is in the studio. What's up, my man? Great to see you once again.
It is. It's a great time to be here again. Unfortunate that the topic of conversation has to be what it has to be today, but I think both of us are still pretty fired up. I'm glad that we have a little bit of time, though, before we get to all the Auburn segments, because still trying to figure out which route that I want to take, but most importantly, I'm just glad that Lindsey's able to come in today without any news of a Braves injury, right? Nothing new has come up on the Braves side of things.
Yeah, nothing new, nothing exciting. I mean, there's nothing to talk about with the Atlanta Braves with Lindsey Crosby, who's here as he is every single Tuesday. My man, great to see you as well.
It is good to be here. I understand, like, baseball is really important to me. I'd like to propose we spend at least some of this next hour talking about this Auburn football thing, though, because it's relevant. And yes, I mean, I cover football and stuff too for Auburn. And I propose we officially change the Baseball Power Hour to a Baseball Half Hour. And we do some football talk here,
okay,
too.
Okay, okay. I'm okay with that. I think we can do a Baseball Power Half Hour. I think that's respectable. Yeah. I think with everything else happening, it's really hard to get away from all of that. But this will allow us for the first 30 minutes or so to get caught up, talk about baseball, talk about the Braves, because, you know, there's always something going on in Atlanta with the, you know, up and down franchise that they are right now. And so we're going to do that. Normally, it's a Baseball Power Hour. If you're new around here, Lindsey Crosby joins us. I'm going to let him plug all of his stuff in just a second. He's with us on Tuesdays from 2 to 3. We cover everything going on around Major League Baseball, Atlanta Braves, Auburn news if there is any. We normally do this for an entire hour. Once a week, it is designated to baseball. But given everything that's going on around the football world, we'll do a Baseball Power Half Hour. And excited to have that with Lindsey today. Before we get into it, my man, tell people where they can find you, what you got going on.
Yeah, okay. So, I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball, kind of the hub for everything, but there's a couple different shows you can listen to and a place to read some work. So First Pitch is our daily MLB recap show covering everything that happened the day before in Major League Baseball. The Braves Today podcast is about the Atlanta Braves. That's also on mostly a daily basis every single weekday, drops at noon Eastern, 11 o'clock Central. And then BravesToday.com is our written work where we're breaking down games, doing deep dives into players, things like that.
Awesome. Well, again, go all check that out with everything that Lindsay has going on. The phone lines are open. You can get in on this. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. I do ask, if you call in this first 30 minutes, keep it baseball for now, okay? Keep it baseball for 30 minutes. If you've got Braves questions, MLB things, stuff like that, let's keep it baseball for 30, and the rest of the show will be football, I promise, all right? But I do want to get into some baseball things because it's coming down to it, gentlemen. And unfortunately, there's been a shift in the NL East since the last time we talked to you, Lindsey Crosby. No, it's not the Phillies losing their lead in the NL East. It's just the fact that the Braves let the Mets catch up, something that we were scared of, we were worried about, and here we are. The Mets caught up, and they've overtaken the Atlanta Braves.
The Braves are officially one game back in the wild card chase. Now, I did get an email from a sportsbook yesterday. I'm not going to name the sportsbook, no free pub, but they did have the Braves as a better chance of making the postseason than the Mets do, but as of right now, Atlanta is one game out of a playoff spot. And it's really wild because when you look at this, one of the winningest teams over the last 2 or 3 weeks has been the New York Mets. I mean, they are, I think right now they are 11-3 in their last 14 games.
9-1 in their last 10.
Yeah, like they are just absolutely destroying teams right now. But for some reason, Atlanta's still favored despite what they did last night, only picking up 2 hits. The second one should have been an error against the Cincinnati Reds in a 1-0 loss.
Against the Reds, man.
Against the Reds. And Nick Martinez. Yeah. Nick Martinez, who was a reliever going into this year, who was not doing well in his last couple starts, they allowed Nick Martinez to throw 7 shutout innings with only 2 hits allowed. And then did not pick up a single hit off of the bullpen. So, frustrating loss there. Atlanta's heading out today. They have a 2-game road trip in Washington. So, they'll take on the Nationals before they head home for 4 with the Dodgers this weekend. So, it's possible that this 1-game deficit could potentially end up being a little bit worse at by the time we talk next week because of Atlanta's tough schedule they have here.
Looking at it, yeah, Braves, Washington, and then they still have 4 with Los Angeles. They do have a 3-game series with the Mets. Looking at the strength of schedule, it does list the Mets as the 3rd toughest remaining schedule, so yeah. I'm guessing that's why it lists the Braves as a higher percentage chance. I believe Atlanta's right in the middle at 508 at 15th spot. But you talked about it last time, Lindsay, when we were on, that the Braves actually play better when their strength of schedule is tougher, don't they? They play better against teams above 500.
The Braves, for some reason, have really struggled this year beating the teams that you are supposed to beat, right? Like, their record against teams who were 500 or better, it's 46-37. But they are just barely above 500 against teams without winning records, which is backwards of how it usually is.
Right. Do you think this is a playing up to, playing down to competition type of thing? I mean, we talk about that so much in sports, is the Auburn factor. Don't play down to your competition. Right, yeah. Don't play down to your competition and make sure you get up for a bigger game. I mean, is that what's happening with the Braves?
I think part of it is, maybe some of this is a little bit of timing from when they were really good, because their hot streak in the year was to open the season, right? When they had most of the roster still intact. They were 19-9 in March and April, and then from then on, they've been about 500.
So you're saying the numbers are carrying over from the beginning of the year.
I think it's kind of a small sample size right now of the teams that you've played. And this keeps changing as teams keep doing good and bad. For a while, the series against the Cubs, you were 4-2 against the Cubs this year. For a while, that counted in your favor in the under 500 thing, but they picked it up. Now they have a winning, now they have a winning record. And so that's changed columns. It's just, that's kind of one of your issues, is this is a moving target. But most of the series that they've had against teams that have been good, their wins came early in the year. They're 3-0 against the Houston Astros. They played them early in the year and swept them before they lost a bunch of players. They're 5-2 against Arizona. They swept them. The first series at home was Arizona, and they swept them there. So a lot of their noteworthy wins against good teams have come early in the year. The Minnesota Twins, that one was recent. the Philly, they've played them a ton, obviously. But like just a lot of these great performances against really good teams have been early. And what I'm worried about, they're 0-3 against the Dodgers. They have not beat the Dodgers yet once this year, and they've got four in their own house this weekend against the Dodgers. Although the saving grace is, I don't know who's going to pitch for the Dodgers this weekend. I don't know if they even have pitchers on the roster available to pitch. They have been incredibly injured on their pitching staff. I think some of that is not deliberate, but I think the Dodgers have specifically targeted pitchers with injury concerns because they can get them at a value. But even then, it just does not look to be a great rotation for this weekend.
If you've been keeping up with the Braves here in the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, I guess, it's not that they're playing bad. It's just they're not playing good. They're just kind of chugging along at about 500.
It's the offense, right? Like this pitching staff, they just had their streak of games with three or less runs broken over the weekend, or three less runs from the starters. That was broken after, I think, 26 games. Pitcher Schwellenbach gave up six runs on Saturday. Only three of those were earned.
Toronto, right?
Toronto, yes. Because of an error there. But outside of that, like they have absolutely just, the pitching staff has been dominant. The offense just hasn't put up a lot of runs. I mean, and I think there's no better example than what we looked at there yet last night. They lose a game 1-0. You know, their loss. Charlie Morton takes a loss, giving up one run in 6 2/3 innings. Like, that's a quality start. That's not fair to him, right?
It's not.
And even some of their most recent wins, they beat Colorado 3-0 at home. They beat Toronto 3-1 at home. They beat Toronto 4-3 in extras, and they scored a bunch of extra runs there. I mean, it's just, you know, they lost to Philly 3-2 because they couldn't score a third run. Yeah. Like, it's just a lot of lack of scoring from the offense, and it's getting worse, not better. And that's my concern, is you have to win as many games as possible to make the postseason.
The Mets are 31-19 since the All-Star break, which is
gross.
Solid, but not anywhere near fantastic.
Yeah, nothing to shoot fireworks about.
But have gained six games on the Braves, who are 25-24 since the All-Star
Literally break. Above 500. That's, yeah. Ugh, that's terrible.
It is just gross. And what was, I think there was, I saw some stat, and obviously it goes, another tally from last night where it's like 16 or 17 straight starts by Braves starting pitchers allowing three or fewer runs.
Yeah.
And you're playing 500 baseball.
Yeah.
At during that stretch, which is, it's a word I like to use as impressive, not impressively good, but impressive, nonetheless.
Yeah, and it's so crazy too because it's such a different problem than what the Braves have had over the past handful of years. And all of their success, offense has never been the issue, hardly ever. And that's what is so, I feel, baffling, right, Lindsay, for a guy like you who covers this team and us that are fans of the Braves. I mean, it's a different problem. Other teams have struggled offensively, sure, but it just hasn't been something the Braves have struggled with as of late.
No, and it's one of those things where, I mean, you're looking at it, you feel like more times than not, it's your Braves are playing in Truist Park. If you look at the, you go to ESPN and look at the game cast at 7:42, oh, Braves scored three in the home half of the first. All of a sudden, it gets to a closer game, but the Braves are sitting there going, it's okay. We still have the 7th, 8th, and 9th where we feel like the back three of our innings have been where the offense has shined. It feels like, I mean, if you don't get up early and you don't get up with a couple crooked numbers, you're throwing in the towel.
There was a time last season when I legitimately never thought Atlanta was out of a game. You could be down four runs and then going into the ninth.
Yeah.
I never thought Atlanta was down in a game. And the point where this offense has been this year, they are below MLB average in runs scored. They're at the point now where if the opponent has scored four runs, you kind of assume the game's over and that Atlanta's just not going to be able to come back. And it's frustrating to be at that point. And it's not all, I think the easy answer everybody always says, it's the injuries. And it's not all the injuries. So many of these guys are underperforming based on what they did last year, which we're now realizing is more of an outlier than we thought, but even outperforming some of their career numbers. I mean, Matt Olson's on track for the worst statistical season of his career. He's batting .233. He's played every single game, and he hasn't hit that low in a full length season, in his career. He hit .240 his first year in Atlanta. Then he was .283 last year. But like even in Oakland, .271, .267. His worst season there was a .247 year, and he won a gold glove, and he's not going to do that this year. He still had 29 homers, and he stole a couple bases, and like he's not going to do that this year.
a reminder to baseball fans, this is the last month. Like, this is it. And,
yeah.
And I know the Braves had some postponements. Last night was one of those kind of makeup games and stuff. Do you know off the top of your head, I haven't looked at it and counted it out physically, how many games are left for the Braves as of today? Because I know, again, there's a couple of those weird postponements that happened back in August and some in July, too. So I don't know off the top of my head. I'm going to throw it to the baseball guy.
While he's looking, I just another stat going from this past year to this year. Braves hit 276 as a team last year.
At this time?
Yes. Or throughout the entire
season. Okay, okay.
The Braves are hitting 240.
Which doesn't sound like a lot.
It's only 36 points, but
that's a lot for a team year
150, 160 games. That is a big time.
It's a lot of runs.
And it takes you from the top half of the league to the bottom half of the league.
Yeah.
Atlanta's got 18 games left. That's it. You have 18 games left.
Wow.
And the amazing thing about those statistics, and we talked about this on today's episode of the Braves Today podcast, because we were discussing, is Marcell Ozuna or Chris Sale actually your MVP? If you take... And this is not perfect because somebody would have replaced him. But if you assume that Marcell Ozuna missed the entire season, you just remove his statistics from Atlanta, they become one of the worst teams in baseball from an RBI perspective and from a run scored perspective. I believe, if I have it right, their RBI count goes from already below average. MLB average is 608. They're at 582. But if you take out Marcell Ozuna's 98, they are 29th in baseball in RBI.
Golly.
Behind, like, ahead of just the Chicago White Sox, who are on track to be potentially the worst baseball team of all time.
I wonder if you were to put just an average or below average player in there rather than taking it all the way out. I mean, right. I'd still think they're bottom third.
And they're probably still bottom third, but at the same time, almost nobody in Atlanta's roster has hit at a league average level this
That's
year.
True.
That's the other part of this, is you've had guys who have done it in spurts. You know, Austin Riley, I believe, has an OPS plus of like 110, so he's 10% better than league average. But for the most part, you have a lot of guys who are, Jared Kelnick is, I think, an 89 OPS plus, 11% worse than league average. Orlando Arcia, 76. Even Ozzie Albies has been in a 98. And all these guys have also missed time. Very few of these Braves hitters have even been league average this year. The most average guy has been Ronald Acuna Jr. at 101. He was barely better than league average when he was in, but he only played 49 games. That's the other part of this, is you've had even guys who have been okay just haven't been in the lineup.
916 RBIs last year. Still 18 games to play, 582 so far this year.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There is a chance. I mean, if the Braves average, what, 20-plus runs a game or something?
They have to, let me see. It's 337, 18 games left. They have to get 19 RBI a game.
There we go. Okay, so right around
last year.
It's technically doable. Yesterday was the anniversary of them putting up 30 on the Marlins a few years ago.
Was that the Adam Duvall 2 Grand Slam game?
Yes, the Adam Duvall 2 Grand Slam game.
Never say never, man. Never say never. All right, we continue on with our baseball power half hour. When we come back, we'll get playoff odds, playoff updates, things around Major League Baseball. Before Lindsay continues with us, we'll talk some football as well here in hour number one on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Full house for hour number one. I'm Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin with us and Lindsey Crosby as well. Not a baseball power hour, more of a baseball power half hour. And won't be a growing trend, but with all the football news and stuff going on, we're going to get Lindsey in on that conversation coming up in just a few minutes. And we got just this segment to wrap up our baseball talk. And we obviously want it to be Braves-centric, being in the location that we are. And unfortunately, it hasn't been super bright as of late for the Atlanta Braves, but there is a guy who is bright for the Braves every time he steps on the mound, and his name is Chris Sale.
Yeah, Chris Sale is, at this point, virtually a lock to win his first career Cy Young. He's going to get down ballot MVP votes. And
it's crazy that he never won one when he was with us in Boston. I never got that.
His best year in 2017, that runner-up to Corey Kluber.
Yeah.
I think when you look at what Kluber did that year, like, it makes sense. Like, not to get off real quick, Sale went 17-8 with a 2.90 ERA and 308 strikeouts, which 300 strikeouts is nuts. But Corey Kluber that year was worth almost 8 WAR. He went 18-4 with a 2.25, had 5 complete games, jeez, 3 of which were shutouts. Like, it makes sense that Chris Sale, like, did not win it. The ERA plus, 1.57 for Sale, 2.02 for Kluber. But Sale not only is going to win it this year, he's in track to win the Triple Crown right now. He leads in strikeouts, leads in ERA, leads in wins. Here's how important he's been to Atlanta. In Chris Sale's 27 starts this year, the Braves are 20-7. In starts by any other pitcher on the roster, they're 58-59. The Atlanta Braves, their rotation as good as they've been over the summer, you know, the 26 straight games of 3 runs or less from the rotation, all of that stuff, they have a losing record when it's not Chris Sale on the mound. That's how important he's been to the Atlanta Braves, and they have a chance. If they swap him and Spencer Schwellenbach one time, I think this weekend of the Dodgers series, if they do that, then Chris Sale will be able to pitch 3 more times this year and be available if you need to win game 162 to make the postseason, and if you don't, he can start game 1 of the wild card series. So, man. And they're going to have to do it because they need him, because obviously he's the only constant in this team is Chris Sale.
So with all of that being said, we got a couple of minutes in this segment.
Yep.
Phillies are still at the top of the NL East.
Yep.
New York Mets are 7 games back of them. Braves are 8 games back. So there's a 1 game separation right now between the Mets and the Braves. The Braves are legitimately fighting for a postseason spot. Season won't be over next time we talk to you, but as of right now, Where's your confidence level on the Braves making the postseason? And if so, how do they do it?
Last night's the first time it dropped below 50%.
For you personally?
For me personally. I know that the Mets have to play Philly for 7. They have 3 this weekend and 4 next week. But Atlanta's offense has been so anemic for so long in the month of September. Especially now you've also lost Whit Merrifield. It's just, it feels incredibly unlikely that Atlanta's going to be able to score enough runs to beat the Dodgers this weekend. And then to go on and beat the Mets when you face them for 3. Unless Atlanta is within 1 game of the Mets when that series comes around, where they could win 2 out of 3 and be tied and have the season tiebreaker,
okay,
I feel like Atlanta's not going to make it.
Mm.
And this is the first time I've been to that point of not thinking Atlanta would be in the postseason. And it's just the offense has been so bad. They were 2 hit last night by Nick Martinez.
Cy Young candidate, right?
You know, and Nick Martinez has been so good this year and so memorable that when I was writing my takeaways from this game, I typed Nick Anderson every single time and had to go back and fix it to Martinez before I published. That's how prominent Nick Martinez has been in MLB this year. He was a reliever 3 months ago.
Well, it doesn't take too much. It's almost like you step on the mound and some crazy things are going to happen when you face Atlanta. Looking at, we were talking about,
yeah,
exactly. Talking about Chris Sale, we also talked about, over the break, Tarik Skubal, how both of those teams are currently out of the wild card situation. There have been 114 Cy Young winners dating back to 1956. Only 16 pitchers have been granted the honor after spending the team on a sub-500 team. Granted, the Braves are not sub-500, but the number has to be somewhat similar to that for a team to have a Cy Young winner and not make the postseason. The last was DeGrom in 2019, and then before that it was R.A. Dickey in 2012, also with the Mets.
Also with the Mets.
And then there's King Felix in 2010, where he had a 2.25 or 2.27 ERA, and his team finished 61-101.
They literally almost won hit like his starts and nobody else's.
But it's crazy that this year both Cy Youngs in the American League and the National League, as of now, and could possibly both miss the postseason.
You could have Triple Crown winners in both leagues, which, by the way, first time 2 lefties would have ever won the Triple Crown.
How about that?
Because both Skubal and Sale lead in ERA, wins, and strikeouts, but both of them could not make the postseason. How mad must Tigers fans be that they traded away Jack Flaherty at the deadline, and then after that made a push, have a positive run differential, and are at a point where they are, you know, 3 games out of a postseason spot with a manageable schedule, too. The schedule's 28th in baseball.
Tigers fans are used to it. Don't worry. Detroit fans, yeah, they're used to it. I mean, the fact that their baseball team is any good, they should just be thankful for that.
Are Auburn fans used to whatever's coming up?
I think so. I think they're used to it, and if they're not, they will be. We got 30 more minutes here in hour number one. Lindsey Crosby is hanging around. We're going to pivot from baseball because, man, there's just too much football to talk about. 30 minutes left in hour number one. Don't you dare turn that radio dial. More coming up.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds it at the back. We did a lot of that yesterday, and I'll tell you what, we're going to do some more of that today on the show as well. We're joined by Lindsey Crosby from Braves Today, First Pitch, so many baseball things, but you do cover other things for Auburn, including Auburn football. And as much as we love baseball, and as much as there is to talk about on the baseball side, the football has just taken everything by storm, as it usually does this time of year, and especially when Auburn football starts losing to teams like California. And yesterday, Uncle T-Bone and I got after it. We're going to get after it again today. Phone lines are open. All right, we want you to get after it today, too. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us if you want to call in, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. I'm going to let you two gentlemen, Christian, you're going to be here with us the rest of the show. Lindsey is about 30 more minutes or so. I've had my chance so far, and I have a lot more to say on the show today, but want to let you guys go ahead and get your initial thoughts out there on the airwaves on ESPN, because I think everybody can agree Saturday was just flat out unacceptable.
Yeah, here's my takeaway on this. The short answer was the game plan and everything perfect? No, but a lot of the mistakes that Peyton Thorne made are unacceptable for a guy who is in his fourth or fifth year starting in college football. It would be different if Hank Brown goes out there and locks onto his first receiver, first read, misses an open receiver, and forces the ball into double coverage. Okay, he's a young player who's never started. There's an explanation. Peyton Thorne has been doing this for too long at too high of a level to make some of the basic elementary mistakes that he continues to make. And it reminds me a lot of, it feels like the Jeremy Johnson situation, where he looked fantastic in practice, he looked fantastic against overmatched opponents, but when he actually got into a game that mattered with opponents who could stand up and hold their own, the moment was too big for him. And it's frustrating that we fixed everything around him and that wasn't good enough.
I said in the beginning of the show, I wasn't quite sure the way that I wanted to go about this. So I'll apologize if it feels like there's three other people in this room, all named Christian, who kind of have a comment about everything. I'm sure it'll all work its way out. But the initial thoughts, oh man, the game I was in the stadium felt eerily similar to New Mexico State, and it really did. And that's not just because of the final score and the outcome and everything, but even everything pregame, everything leading up to it kind of felt a little bit off. Auburn goes down and scores a touchdown drive or touchdown on their first drive. And it felt like after that, it was, oh, cool. All right. We looked good in week one. We continued it the first drive. Here we go. We're good. We got guys now. Everybody's firing off their tweets about we have pass catchers now. Look how much this offense has changed. Look at the offensive line. Look at this passing game. Well, you have a drive that kind of stumbles a little bit. A couple of nice passes. You punt. California scores. And all of a sudden, it's 7-7. Cal takes a 14-7 lead. And you feel it. You begin to – you can't explain what it is. Can't explain what happens in Jordan-Hare, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Oh, I can explain it.
But the feeling of just, are we scared? Is this what's about to happen?
Is this really happening
and
again?
It felt so similar to that game last year.
Can I point out that when you have a lot of success on your very first drive, and then you can't seem to repeat that immediately after in your next couple drives, oftentimes it's because that first initial drive is almost entirely or completely scripted.
I was going to say, that's what's been practiced.
You have pre-decided, these are concepts that work against this team based on what we've seen on film. This is what we're going to run, and it works. But then for some reason, you're not able to live up to that same play calling standard when everything is live. And I'm not blaming any specific person. Derek Nix has a hand in this. Hugh Freeze has a hand in this. There's multiple chefs in this kitchen. But this was an issue. Gus Malzahn had the same issue. He would script up just the coolest, most amazing concepts that worked once. And then from that point on, when the shots were live, he was defaulting to dives up the middle on first down in a hurry up and things like that.
Which led to so many complaints about Gus Malzahn with the lack of adjustments, right? It led to everybody asking, what in the world? And this was me growing up watching Gus Malzahn in my teenage years and throughout, you know, middle school, high school, and into that. It was, okay, you guys just went into the locker room for 20 minutes. What did you do?
This.
What did you do, Gus?
Yeah. This game felt like Auburn basketball 2021, 2022. The beginning of the year couldn't stop them because they had plan 1A and plan 1B up until January. They had a number one by their team. Everything was looking great. All of a sudden, team said, oh, look, here's the two things. Here's their adjustment, their one adjustment that they make. And all of a sudden, the second half of the season, Auburn said, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, no. What do we do? I don't know how to adjust in basketball. And that's how it felt. And that's exactly how Saturday felt, too.
Cal sat back there with two safeties the entire time and just said, we're not going to let Auburn break one over the top to these great athletes out wide. And we kept trying to throw into that deep coverage. And you saw Auburn, apparently after halftime, they said, hey, we are going to run the dang ball. We're going to establish it, right? And you saw right after halftime, they're reeling off run play, run play, run play, and they're working. And Auburn marches down the field, and then they stopped doing that and went back to the same thing they were doing of just forcing the pass.
Which brought up so many questions for me in the press box. It's like, man, why did Auburn not do this to start the game? And I understand coming off of week one, right? You're coming off of one of the best throwing passing performances offensive wise we've seen in a long, long time. I mean, Auburn scored more points than they have in however many years it was. And you want to continue that because, Peyton Thorne looked good. The receivers looked good. The offensive line looked good enough, right? And you wanted to see, can we do it again? Can Auburn do it against better opponents? And the fact that we're having to use Cal as the litmus test and the fact that Auburn failed that litmus test is we're going to get to that point. But I understand why Auburn had that mindset. And then after the first drive, as Christian alluded to, it's like, oh, all right, cool. That was nice. Let's see if we can do it again. And then you couldn't.
Have you seen the stats from the first drive to the rest of it?
Oh, yeah.
Peyton Thorne. Peyton Thorne, 5 of 9, 103 yards, 15-yard touchdown on that first drive. After that, 8 of 18, 62 yards, 0 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He completed 44% of his passes. Here's what's wild. Last year, Peyton Thorne against FBS teams with a winning record, Peyton Thorne was a 54.3% passer. 5 yards per attempt. More interceptions than touchdowns. We lost all 7 games. This year, in his first matchup against an FBS opponent, 51.9% completion percentage, 6.1 yards per attempt, 4 interceptions, 1 touchdown, and you lost as a double-digit favorite at home. At this point, it kind of feels like Peyton Thorne is who we thought he was, or who we were worried that he was. And my biggest issue here, there is nothing Peyton Thorne can do on Saturday, this upcoming Saturday against New Mexico, that will make any of us feel any better that he will be able to handle the next week against Arkansas.
I'm going to be here long. So, Lindsay, your thought. Is it? Who is it? What's the game plan moving forward? And I think you have to take Hugh Freeze's comments this early week into consideration as well. What he said yesterday afternoon in his press conference and what he said, let me say that again, what he actually said at Tiger Talk last night.
The way that I think about this, he made a point of practice has to carry over into the game. And he's contemplating a change, right? From folks who have spoken to Hank Brown, there is a belief amongst Hank Brown and his people that if he has a good week of practice, he will get to start on Saturday. And I think, like, this is the issue, is there's no other better time to make a quarterback switch than right now. Because if you think about after your bye week, well, guess what? You have to go to Missouri, and they're not a bad team, right? The best time to make a quarterback change is right now, so that you get a week to break in against New Mexico before you then faced Arkansas, and then you step up one more time to face Oklahoma, all at home. So as much as I want to assume that they finally have come to the realization that it can't be Peyton Thorne going forward, I honestly don't know. That's the problem. I honestly don't know who's going to be the quarterback on Saturday. But I do think the right move is for it to not be Peyton Thorne, because playing on Saturday won't fix any of his problems. And it keeps us from finding out if Hank Brown could be the guy going forward. Because Peyton Thorne's going to do well against New Mexico. He did well against Alabama A&M. But we've seen none of that translates to a quality opponent from a major conference.
I want to pivot a little bit because, okay, again, Christian and I are going to get into this a lot in hour number two. But y'all's thoughts on what Hugh Freeze has said this week, yesterday in the presser, last night Tiger Talk. There was a lot said.
Yeah.
And the more you listen and the more you read and the more you think about what Hugh Freeze had to say, and I'm not normally somebody like, oh, let's dive into these two sentences and see if we can break it down and pick it apart and see if he said something he didn't really say. I'm not normally that type of person, but in this situation I am, because he said a lot and he told us a lot yesterday, even if he didn't fully say it.
I think it could even go back to the Saturday postgame, the four-minute press conference after the game on Saturday.
I was there.
Because they asked, or you might have even asked the question, I believe it was you, that asked about, hey, after coming off of week one where everything looked good, all of a sudden week two happens, what does the quarterback room look like moving forward? And it was the very first time that I have not seen him almost step in front of Peyton Thorne and defend him. It was, I need to watch film before I comment. And that was the very first time that we've ever heard him directly not say, hey, Thorne is the guy. He's the guy who I brought to SEC Media Days. This is the guy that we are defending. He is the best option. This is who we're going with. It was for the very first time it felt like there was a possible realization of, yeah, I'm going to have to watch, and I'm going to have to pay a lot of attention to what I saw on Saturday.
And then the follow-up to that was at Tiger Talk last night. He said he thought, quote, there was one play where he thought was a bad call by the coaching staff in the Cal game, and then everything else, there was something there. Like, the play call was there to be had. It maybe wasn't perfect, right? But there was something there to make that into a positive play, and the offense did not execute. It kind of reminds me of that old quote from John McKay. They asked him, Coach, what do you think of your offense's execution? He said, I'm in favor of it. Like, first thing I thought of. I mean, and yes, the coaching staff does have something to answer for if the offense can't execute. But you can only do so much. And again, I don't think it was perfect. I would probably characterize more than one play.
Which I agree
maybe
with
not
that.
the right play. But there were plenty of times when you can go and you can see that there were options. There were places to go with the ball that Peyton Thorne did not see them. He did not look that way. The ball didn't get there on time. You know, there was a great breakdown from Aaron Murray. That
I
came
was
out
about to say
Sunday
the exact
afternoon.
Same thing.
We
I was
mentioned it
ask,
on the show yesterday.
I was going to ask if people had watched it.
And I encourage people to go watch it.
Yes. And one of my big takeaways is he says in the description or in the title of the video, it's not on Peyton Thorne. And then when you watch the video, everything is that ball should be out by now.
Yes.
That ball should be out by now.
Yep.
What are you doing with this? Like, there was your throw and you didn't make it. And
from a former successful SEC quarterback.
Yes. And one who does not pull any punches when it comes to Auburn.
Absolutely.
He doesn't love not love this program.
I think he has a lot of strong hate for this program.
Yes. And
he knew
so,
that would build up the podcast or the show.
There you go. Hey,
good for him.
And
he did it.
Like, this is something where, to me, the change in Hugh Freeze's tone on Saturday and then again last night kind of tells me that in his mind, this is all speculation, I've not talked to Hugh Freeze, in his mind, he knew last year wasn't acceptable. He wasn't sure if Peyton Thorne was the guy this year, but he said, we're going to go with it. We're going to see.
He's hopeful.
He's hopeful. We have fixed the other problems. We brought in more offensive linemen. We replaced every starting receiver with a new, better version of that guy from last year. We've done everything we can reasonably do to improve the offensive situation around him. And if it still doesn't work, the common denominator is him. It's not anything else. The offensive line's different. The wide receivers are different. The play caller is different. We've changed everything but him. And the response on Saturday and then last night's update with after they watched film tells me that he's come to the realization, just like the rest of us have, that the issue is Peyton Thorne. And so because of that, I would hope they would recognize and see that the time to make a quarterback change is now and not after Georgia at the bye week, which is when you would typically make a quarterback change. The time is now to break somebody in, and if you still want a chance to salvage the season, have a bowl-eligible season, possibly win 6-7 games, which I think this roster is capable of doing.
We wrap up our conversation with Lindsey Crosby after this. We'll get into hour number two. Much more to talk about in terms of Auburn football, what in the world happened Saturday, and what will happen this Saturday. We'll wrap up hour number one after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Lindsey Crosby joining us in the studio, and a little bit different today. It's normally our baseball power hour, but we went with a baseball power half hour today just because of all the football craziness. And so we appreciate you adjusting with us, my friend, and always enjoy talking sports with you. Plug everything that you have on the baseball side one more time, and then I'm going to throw a question up for you on the way out.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball, kind of the hub for everything there. The shows, if you want to watch these, First Pitch, wherever you get your podcasts, Monday through Friday, breaking down the previous day's MLB news. Braves Today, breaking down the Atlanta Braves on a daily basis, wherever you get your podcasts there. And the writing for that, bravestoday.com, is the Braves Today Substack.
So we're talking Auburn football, and again, Christian and I are going to have all of our number two. Phone lines will be wide open, and we can't wait to get into that. But Lindsey, want to propose this question to you, because everybody will be talking about it between now and Saturday. Other than winning or losing the football game, what is the best and worst case scenario for Auburn at the quarterback spot, offensively, everything combined, other than winning or losing, what is the best and worst case scenario for Auburn on Saturday?
I'm going to do it by quarterback, right? So Hank Brown goes out there, and no matter what he does, it's a good thing. Because if he looks great, okay, you feel comfortable in letting him try it against Arkansas, right? If he looks bad, that answers the question about, is there a better alternative to Peyton Thorne right now on the roster?
Since he's the clear number two.
He's the clear number two. He is miles ahead of Holden Gariner. Walker White is not ready for action. They've already said they're not. He's on the scout team. They're not going to start him this season unless they have to because of injury. So Hank Brown does not really have any downside on starting on Saturday. Peyton Thorne, however, obviously the worst case scenario is Peyton Thorne goes out there and sucks. Like, Peyton Thorne goes out there and looks like he did against Cal, that's a disaster, right? I mean, you're still going to win that game, it feels like, but that's your worst-case scenario short of an Auburn loss.
I'll jump in quickly and say, I don't know, because that New Mexico offense put up 39 points against Arizona.
Top 25 team in the country.
Yeah.
So, but granted,
yeah.
Going off
small sample sizes, yeah.
Right.
But still. But if Peyton Thorne is good, I made this point earlier, if Peyton Thorne's good, that doesn't tell you anything. Because Peyton Thorne was good against Alabama State, and then he sucked against Cal.
Yeah.
So I'm almost of the mindset there is no upside in playing Peyton Thorne on Saturday, but there is plenty of downside because he could be bad. The flip side, there is no downside to playing Hank Brown, provided you win the football game, because you get an answer one way or the other.
I think that's the only caveat, yeah, is if you play Hank Brown and it just goes to crap and you lose the game, which you would most likely bail out the young quarterback at some point. But
yeah. If he was atrocious, you would take him out of the game, right? You wouldn't let him just sink all game. You'd make sure no matter what that you win, right? If you had to pull him at halftime or whatever. But outside of that, there's no real downside to Brown. But Peyton Thorne, nothing he can do will make any Auburn fan feel better on Saturday.
If Hank Brown goes in and struggles in the first half, then Auburn can just do what they've done the past, like, 4 or 5 years and go with a two-quarterback scheme, right?
Oh, yeah. We should just go to the Gus Malzahn process. Has anybody thought about that?
Do we have a fullback that we can make spin in the circle?
Yeah. You know, one quarterback, one play, then swap him out for the second down, put the other guy back in on third down, wildcat for fourth down. Love it.
Works so well. We have all these extra running backs. Let's go ahead and do that.
Who needs coaches when we have us?
But, I mean, like, honestly, there's a way to win the game if Hank Brown is bad, and it's just taking Hank Brown out or doing something like that, going to a different quarterback, going wildcat, whatever.
Run Peyton, the ball.
Yeah, run the dang ball.
Throw a screen.
Hank Brown can hand the ball off still. If he's not passing well, he can hand the ball off still. And our running game should be able to win that game for us.
You would think.
But
you
Peyton, would think. Peyton Thorne, there's no upside here.
Okay, there you go.
How about get a skill guy out in space?
No,
like
stop.
Almost like running the football, but instead it's like 3-on-2.
That's crazy. I'm going to turn your microphone off. Okay, Lindsay, we appreciate it, man. Those are his thoughts, and you can check him out, Auburn Daily, and then all of his baseball coverage. Always a great time to have you in studio, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Lindsay Crosby, go check him out on social media as well. Christian Griffin is with me for hour number two. Lots more thoughts. We got to get some more things out in the world. Maybe something will happen if we say it, right? We'll speak it into existence. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway in hour number two here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, it was a lot of fun. We had Lindsey Crosby in here from Braves Today, First Pitch, Auburn Daily. He's got a lot of baseball coverage, okay? And he's normally with us for an entire hour on Tuesdays in the first hour for our Baseball Power Hour. But we condensed it today to a half hour, and then we talked football with him, got all of his thoughts on what happened this past weekend and what he expects to see this upcoming weekend for Auburn football because, look, there's just too much going on that side of things to avoid that conversation. And so Lindsey was great, man. He had some really hot takes on the football side, gave you an update on the Atlanta Braves and what their playoff status is. They're fighting with 18 games to go. They are fighting for a playoff spot. So that was all in hour number one. You can go and check that out at ESPNAU.com right after the show today. It'll be posted on our station website. It's just the show posted as a podcast. You can go and listen to that anytime that you want to. So that'll be posted today. Coming up here in hour number two, it's me and Christian Griffin. We're talking all things Auburn football. May dip into a little bit of high school things as well. And just kind of continuing on the trend of what's happening here around the state and around the SEC, around college football, because yesterday we didn't talk at all about what happened in college football because of everything that happened here on the plane. So lots to get to in hour number two. Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can be a part of the show. Lots of you were a part of it yesterday. Would love to hear from you again today, or you can shoot us a text in the on the line text box at 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, want to remind you, hour number two, each and every day here on the line, is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Christian, hour number two is upon us, my friend, and we got a lot more to talk about with what happened this past Saturday. And
it seems to continue to come down to the quarterback situation, right? And yesterday, throughout the entire two-hour show, we had a ton of phone calls, T-Bone and I did, and we were giving our initial thoughts, and I continued to go back to the press conference. Both of them. Saturday post-game, like Lindsay was speaking of, and then yesterday afternoon, because I went to the presser, bolted across town, and got back in the studio about 10 minutes before we went on the air. And I just couldn't get over some of the things that Hugh Freeze was saying. And then he doubled down on some of those last night with Tiger Talk. And I can't tell you how many texts that I've received in the last 24 hours of people are not pleased and they're not encouraged by what Hugh Freeze had to say to the media and then directly to the fans on a fan call-in interactive sports talk show of Tiger Talk once a week. Like, fans are not encouraged by what they've heard from their head coach in this last, I don't know, 72 hours.
They're not. And, again, it goes back to deciding which way to go about this, because you can go the way of Auburn is still, you know, still a year or so out from being great. They're going to be good this year, but they're not going to be great this year. Or you can go with the route of, like, what is this? What we saw Saturday was completely unacceptable. You lost to whatever team it was, but just absolutely unacceptable. And, yeah, the Tiger Talk thing, I feel like that was what stirred up more people than the actual final score or the players on the field. I didn't get the exact call, the call-in from Tiger Talks, but hearing about everything that went on, it feels like there's a hole. And with what Lindsay was saying, to where with some players or some scenarios, you feel like there's no way out. It feels like there's no light at the end of the tunnel, no bright side with any decision that is made.
And to go off of that then, I was talking with others this morning around the office about all of this, and you guys brought up a really good point. You brought it up in the first hour where Saturday night in the post-game presser, when I asked Hugh Freeze, given Peyton's really good performance in week one and a poor performance here in week two, what's the move going forward? And you were spot on. That's the first time that Hugh Freeze has not stepped off the ledge in front of the bus and taken the hit for him.
Yeah.
And defended him and not put his job on the line, but we're getting to that point. The more we move, the closer to that side of the pendulum we're getting. I'm not saying we're there yet by any means, but we've started to sway that way just a hair. And that's fascinating to me, because end of last year, into this spring, all summer long, Dallas at SEC Media Days, fall camp, game one. Hugh Freeze has defended him the entire time.
Yeah.
Not just defended him, has preached for him, has screamed from the rooftops for him, has said all of the right things. And for me, and for I feel a lot of Auburn fans, convinced us that Peyton Thorne was the guy. Convinced us that he was going to be different. That, oh, he didn't have a spring a year ago, and oh, we got a better offensive line now, and man, look at all these tools. Go back to the same saying, I've given him the tools to be successful. And it's very obvious what he was telling us. Peyton, it's now or never. Be good or you ain't the guy. And here we are at the first sign of trouble, at the first sign of good competition that's not Alabama A&M. He looked terrible. And you saw and heard Hugh Freeze yesterday both times, and even Saturday as well. It was the first time that he had to reconsider that decision.
Right.
And one that he's defended for a long, long time.
And it shows that, especially after Saturday, the way that he answered the questions was he felt shell-shocked a little bit. Because, again, that's what he's been preaching to all of us and convincing. And for the first time, it was, okay, that was the reality, maybe not the permanent reality. You mentioned the phrase, it's now or never. That was the first sign of never. That's the flip side of Peyton, it's go time or it's not. And that's the very first time that you saw a little bit of that reality. I'm glad that y'all talked about the Aaron Murray breakdown on YouTube again.
It's
25 minutes. If you have time, go and look into it, because he doesn't openly say the title is misleading, saying that why it wasn't Peyton Thorne's fault.
That's what we call clickbait in the business.
It 100% is. But you did see a lot of other things in there. You saw a lot about the receiver routes being lazy or the halfback routes being lazy coming out, and how many times that people ran into the line of Thorne's sight where he couldn't get to that open receiver. But it did. It felt like more times than not, it was the ball should be out now. Okay? Even waiting two more seconds, the ball should be out now. And I think about that second interception where it was thrown, we think, to Keandre Lambert-Smith, where he came across the far side and was open the entire route. And the biggest thing, I talked about it with a couple buddies last night, and the word that I feel like we haven't seen from Thorne is anticipation. The ability to throw a receiver open. You haven't been able to see it. If somebody is open, or if you have that one route against Alabama A&M, hey, Cam Coleman, run this stop and go where the entire corner breaks, and I can throw it after you're already past the cornerback, because I can then see that you've beaten him. But there hasn't been the ability to, I see Keandre running this way. There's a linebacker right here, but he's looking at me and his feet are still. There's no way that he's getting to that ball over the top 15 yards to the right of him. And you haven't seen that from Thorne at all. And there were plenty of times in Cal, and again, that Aaron Murray brought up, where it should have been very easily visible.
I don't think he can. I don't think he's got the ability. For a guy that started in his fourth year of starting high-level college football, he couldn't make the throws on Saturday when they're wide open. Yes, there were protection issues, and Freeze made it very clear that he wanted people to know that, and it's true. There were protection issues.
Very much true.
There very much were protection issues. But you talk about a guy and a quarterback right now in Peyton Thorne, his confidence is shot. Yeah, that's obvious. His confidence is shook.
That's a whole other thing. Sorry, not to totally interrupt you off of your thought, but that's a completely different thing. It felt like after that overthrow to Cam Coleman, which granted whether or not that was on Coleman for breaking out of the slant slow or Thorne leading him too far, whatever, the results being an interception, you could tell that completely threw in his mind the hesitation for everything.
And that feeds into what I was saying is, what have we seen from Peyton Thorne as a quarterback that tells us he can make an anticipation throw, to throw it to a receiver who's not open at this point in the field, but 5 yards to the right, he will be open.
Right.
He has not shown me that ever in his career at Auburn. At Auburn. He had some of that at Michigan State, but that's, what, 4 years ago? 3 years ago? And that dude is gone. He does not exist. And if he does, it ain't coming out here. And it's sad. And you know what? I want to go back to Freeze, too, because he sold us on that, and he sold everybody on that around the country, the SEC, around the state, and around town, that Peyton Thorne was the guy. I'm putting my trust, my program, in the hands of Peyton Thorne. And I think, me, Jacob Goins, I believe that Hugh Freeze believed in him. I think Freeze believed that. I think Freeze believed Peyton Thorne could be the guy. Lindsay got into this a little bit in the first hour. If we change everything else, Thorne can be good. And I believe that Freeze believed that. But now he's having to reconsider. For the first time, he's choosing to. Nobody's making him redecide. If he wants to, he could jog out Peyton Thorne Saturday. He could start Peyton Thorne every game if he wanted to. Who's going to stop him? Nobody. But I think he realized this is the right decision, for at least to consider it.
Right.
To consider a change. And of the 20-plus phone calls we got yesterday, and again, phone lines are open here in hour number 2, 334-321-1390. Of the phone calls we got yesterday and the people I've seen on social media and those that are at Tiger Talk and everything like that, I haven't seen one person who has said, let's give Peyton Thorne one more shot. And whether that's fair to him, you can get into that conversation too, whether it's fair to Peyton Thorne, right? And I took some admittance of this yesterday. Are we overreacting after week 2 of college football? Like, I think there's a conversation to be had there,
But I've yet to see one person defend him other than some of his teammates.
And granted, that's what you do want to see is the teammates defending him, let everybody else outside the program say what they need to say. But the voices have gotten louder and they've become more prominent. And I think, again, for the very first time, as we've talked about this entire segment, Freeze has, not that he hasn't listened to it before, but the reality has set in, his ears have opened up of, okay, it's time. It's time to make either some sort of adjustment or make some sort of look in the mirror to see if this is what I really, really want to be for my offense. Because, again, all offseason, Peyton Thorne made the right read more times than not with the RPOs, made the right read more times than not on when to tuck it and run.
In practice,
and he never once said on, and again, this is speculation, but never once openly talked about straight dropbacks of receivers running 10 or 15 yard routes of finding the right one.
And he still, Freeze admitted numerous times that there were still instances where he wasn't making the right decision or he wasn't making the best decision, right?
Or simply was taking too long.
Correct.
And in Division I FBS football, not FBS versus FCS, but in FBS football, how many times can a single sack or a missed throw or a hit and it turns into a fumble, or what we saw in interception number two with Thorne getting hit as he was throwing because he was waiting to make sure that Keandre Lambert-Smith would be open. He was making sure there wasn't the anticipation of he's going to be open. How many times does that split second make the biggest difference in a play, in a drive, or in a college football game?
Let's get to the let's get to a break. We got a couple of phone calls. Want to make sure we have plenty of time for those. Let's get to a break. Dan and John, you're both going to be up when we come back. We're just underway in hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Got a couple of phone calls. Let's get to them here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. We'll start with Dan in Auburn. You're on the line. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Okay, I'm going to try to say all this pretty quick.
Okay.
There's a lot of information. Okay, first of all, okay, Peyton Thorne had a terrible game. I'm not even going to try to sugarcoat any of that.
Yep.
But I think there was a lot of things that contributed to that that are not in his control. Okay, first of all, I think scheduling the first game that we did, it was a terrible team, and it gave everybody out there a false sense of, you know, we're this great team, high-powered team, we're going to be throwing for 400 yards a game. And that's why the fan base is mad, because we all thought that that's what we were going to get, and all of a sudden, you know, reality sits in. You know, we play a team that actually plays defense and can pressure the quarterback. You know, I think that game was a waste, that first game. Peyton Thorne got no practice. We didn't have any type of pressure to where we'd have to go back this after the first week and make changes and make some adjustments. We're making all of our adjustments between game two and three when we needed a better team to play against where we could be making adjustments between one and two. Okay, that's my first statement. Secondly, okay, if you notice some of the routes that we ran on the one slant that went to Cam Coleman, I noticed he curled the slant instead of actually cutting it sharper. So I think I think some of the issues might be the patterns aren't being run the way, you know, the way they're supposed to. He is hanging on to the ball too long, but I think part of the reason he's getting the pressure is because we're waiting till the last second to hike the ball because we can't get the play in quick enough and give him time to really see. I mean, the defense is sitting there looking at the snap. I mean, the clock going down to 3 seconds. I mean, heck, there's no way to. I mean, they're jumping the snap and everything.
Yeah.
And that's not helping the cause, you know. And then if your quarterback is having trouble throwing the ball down the field because he's having to make decisions down the field, then give him some plays that are decisive that he can get rid of the ball quick. And you know, the other team did it to us all day long. Yeah, they were only getting 5 or 6 yards to play, but we have such great athletes out there. Just give them the ball, and let's see what they can do with it. I mean, we got guys who can break tackles and can get bunches of yards. I mean, I think there was just a lot of things, and I think it sucks for Peyton because everybody wants to put all the blame on him. But there's a lot of blame to go along, not counting Fairweather dropping passes. You know, a guy that we're counting on to be, you know, our future NFL player. You know, there are guys that need to step up across the board. It's not just Peyton.
I'm in agreement with that. Dan, appreciate the call, man. Always great to hear from you. Loyal fan right there, loyal listener as well. I wrote down everything you just said, and we're going to get to all of it. I promise we're going to address it because I'm in agreement with you on quite a few things in there. Let's get to the phone lines again. John in Auburn, what's up?
Hey, guys, I have a different take. I do not believe this guy is falling. I think the sky is blue. Auburn was -5 in turnovers. If this was an NFL game between two evenly matched teams and one team was -5 in turnovers, a team would get beat by 30. So Auburn only got beat by 7 in this game with -5 turnover ratio. That's a game that gets played with an oblong football. If everything else is even, Auburn has a better roster. That's a game Auburn wins by 3 touchdowns. Is our turnover problem? Absolutely. But I think this is a fixable problem. It's not like there's a roster deficit or things like that. Just a couple tweaks here early in year two. I still believe in the progression of the program.
How do you fix the problem of turnover or turning the ball over, John?
I think you have to make a change in the quarterback situation.
Wow.
If that doesn't change, then you may have systemic problems in the quarterback room. But I do think you saw that Auburn had a more talented roster than Cal. You know, you just can't have 5 empty possessions giving that great field position every time.
Especially with a team like Cal. And, John, we appreciate the call. Great to hear from you as well. Very loyal listener there in John and Auburn. You cannot go empty possessions, especially against a team like Cal who dominated time of possession in the first half, which gets us to a text that we received in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. I'm going to let you respond to this, Christian. Why did they wait until halftime to make an adjustment on defense? We were getting shredded on passes, which led to time of possession being dominated, which led to Auburn having less possessions, which makes the turnovers hurt even more.
It feels like everything becomes such a big snowball effect.
They all fed off of each other.
Right, exactly. And I'm glad that both of those guys brought up points because, again, there's so many different routes that you can go with a conversation like this. And I agree. I do not believe that the sky is falling. You give a team 5 turnovers, yes, it's going to be a more lopsided game.
I don't know. I saw Chicken Little running outside. He's screaming, man. It's coming.
The little piece, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, again, you look at the Cal team that gave Auburn plenty of trouble last year. They brought just about every single player back this year and I believe had a top 15, if not a top 20, portal class. So again, it's one of those things where you look at the name, and I think the NIL era still plays a big factor in that, to where it is the name Cal that, oh, there is no way that Auburn should lose to Cal. An ACC team now, not a Pac-12 team, but again, a team that has done really well with the portals and their NILs and things of that nature, and that's not, again, defending Auburn, and hey, that made it closer than it should have, but it makes it to where it brings up that conversation of you did play a talented team on the other side of the football.
I don't think it makes it inexcusable, but I do think it's a way to justify it. And I think Josh Pate had some comments about this. I watched his reaction 7-8 minute video on YouTube last night where he was sort of saying what you were saying of Auburn fans for the history of time, and I'm still this way, and I disagree with some things that Pate said, who is great at what he does, by the way. He was saying that Auburn fans are coming out of the woodworks, and it's true, saying we can't lose to Cal. If you're Hugh Freeze, you can't lose to Cal. And
but
his thought was, yeah, but you did. It's exactly what he said. He said, okay, but you did, because Cal brought in a top 20 transfer class. Because John and Auburn is saying, yes, Auburn was the better talented or the more talented team on Saturday, but I don't think the gap is as far away as we think it is.
I don't either. And again, I think the name and the bias of college football history plays a big, big factor into everything.
Yep, which is what Pate was saying, was your brain as an Auburn fan, as an SEC football fan, won't let you accept the fact that Cal can come into your stadium and beat you. But times have changed in college football, and that's acceptable. Like, you have to accept that times have changed, and teams like Cal are better than they've ever been and will continue to get better, and things like this will continue to happen. NIU beating Notre Dame, Vanderbilt beating other Power 4 teams. That's going to become a more common occurrence, but it still doesn't excuse the fact that Auburn lost to Cal in the way they did and how they did it this past Saturday.
That's the other thing. It's not just the fact of you go out and lose a 38-35 game where
you
both
don't
teams
turn the ball
play
over.
Great, and it's just, we had a couple drives get away from us. It's how
correct
how you lost, the way you lost, and the demeanor in which you lost, where it felt, again, I brought it up in the first hour, where it felt like the New Mexico State game. It really did. And that was throughout the stadium. Again, just that eerie, that weird vibe that just comes around about halfway through the third quarter. And do we get nervous now?
It's almost a denial thing through the first half. You're like, oh, Auburn's fine. Auburn wins these. We're a better team. We'll find a way. But then, yeah, about halfway through the third quarter, you're like, oh, crap. And then you don't.
Yeah, and it goes back to the halftime adjustments, which, granted, were very much made. Man, Francisco Mendoza was 19 of 21 for, I think it was 204 or 208 yards in the first half. He finished with 236 passing yards. So, granted, all things said and done, it was a big-time adjustment. And despite as bad as it felt, he gave up two touchdowns in the first half. Granted, it took longer than it should have with the linebackers playing really far in, trying to stop the run, where it was just a dink and dunk down the field, allowed for 6-7 minute drives, and it felt like Auburn just couldn't get in a rhythm offensively. So many different ways that you can go about it, and we've already gotten a couple here this afternoon.
Yeah, Dan, we got all your points written down. Appreciate you and John both calling in. We're going to get to some of those and continue to find different routes to go, because there's so many others that we can get to. Phone lines continue to be open, 334-321-1390. 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz, joined by Christian Griffin, the voice of Lee Scott Academy. And we're talking, you know what we're talking about. I don't even have to tell you what we're talking about. And we had a couple of phone calls in the past segment, and phone lines are still open. You can be a part of it. 334-321-1390. Dan in Auburn called in, a very loyal listener, loyal caller. We appreciate him and his support. And he had a bunch of quick hitters and then had to dip out. But I wrote them down because I want to get to these. He talked about Auburn playing an easy opponent in week one. I get where he's coming from. I get where he's going. Not really in the control of Hugh Freeze and this staff and this team, right? You just play who's on the schedule, and they're scheduled so far out. But I do think an easy game like Auburn had did give us a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking? What's
I'll
the term
it,
I'm
false
looking?
Hope.
There, false hope. That's exactly
that's
what I was
exactly
looking for.
That's exactly what it is.
Correct.
That's something that lingers from the locker room, which you can't help but have a little bit of after a 73-3 performance, but it's something that really hits the fan base hard. We talked about it over the break, where Auburn, you know, goes in and the media gives them a 6.5, you know, games won during this season, and everybody at Auburn is, okay, that should be easy to hit. Auburn should win 7, 8, possibly even 9 games. You have a great week one, and all of a sudden it's, oh, why is 6.5 the line? I mean, it could be 8 or 9 should be easy. We could get 10 or 11.
Right.
And then you have that false hope set in, and then the comeback of reality hits. And unfortunately, it's a week like this where it hits rather hard.
And yesterday, I took some blame. I did. T-Bone didn't like it, but I took some blame for drinking the Kool-Aid, if you will, going a little too heavy on week one, because we all can agree that week one against Alabama A&M, the term we used was it looked different. It did. It looked different because that's the first time in a long time that Auburn not only beat an opponent like that, but they did it in dominating fashion and threw the ball everywhere.
I was going to say, or just simply passed for more yards than they ran for.
Yeah, Auburn just hasn't done that in so long, and it was refreshing to see. And so we went from one crazy side of the pendulum to the other. A lot of us did, myself included. Yeah. And I apologize for doing that because I was wrong. Obviously, we got brought back down to earth very, very quickly. And so I get where Dan and Auburn was going with that. He also talked about the offense taking too much time, right? Taking the play clock down to under 5 seconds and not getting play calls in and having some confusion. Man, the coach can talk to you, Peyton. He can talk to you in your earpiece. You shouldn't have any confusion. I know it shuts off at 15. I know the defense can move after that. But come on, man. And not having any urgency to come back in this game. Daryl Dappert's asked Hugh Freeze about this 6.5 minutes to play in the fourth quarter. Auburn's just strolling right along. They're just going for a walk in the park. No urgency here. No concern here. Let's see if we can score. Unbelievable.
It was, again, it's one of those, it happened more so in the second half, or at least that was when it became really noticeable when Auburn was having trouble throwing the ball. It said, okay, let's try and run the ball. The punter for Cal did everything that he could have done. I mean, God, honestly, a round of applause for the right leg of the Cal punter who pinned Auburn, was it twice inside the 2-yard line?
That one he dropped on the 2 was incredible.
It was, I mean, again, and so Auburn runs the ball. Jarquez Hunter picks up 8. It's 2nd down and 2. What does Auburn, the past 20 years of Auburn, get on the ball, get 3 or 4 yards, get a first down, move the chains, and then you start
going.
And
then let's go.
Once you pick up that first down, you think about it with like a 2-minute offense and how every coach talks about it. You get the first down, and then it feels like the offense gets into a little bit of a rhythm. You have the defense on their heels working backwards. You're working your way up the field. So on 1st and 10, Peyton Thorne, quarterback run or quarterback RPO, he decided to keep it, picked up 7, 2nd down and 3. Why use 38 seconds of the clock halfway through the fourth quarter when you still have 84 yards to go to the end zone?
And the other 2 points he had that feed into this, and Aaron Murray talked about this in his YouTube video, receivers not running full routes. I think that's still happening.
It very much was.
It's not. The receivers didn't have a perfect game Saturday. Let's go ahead and put that in the universe. And then just making it easier on the quarterback. And Freeze addressed that in his Monday press conference, was we've got to make the package smaller. Yeah. We made it too hard. We made it too big, and we made it too difficult for them. Which
you can take one of two ways.
You can, and we had this conversation yesterday. It's like, well, that's scary, because if the quarterbacks can't handle it, then you've got some concern. Or it's like, okay, then why didn't you do this earlier?
Right. Why are there 15 plays where all 4 receivers are running 30-yard routes that take 6 or 7 seconds to develop when you have guys on the offensive line that are shaken up or banged up and not necessarily
playing? A receiver
playing
banged
or,
up at one point?
Right. But everything seemed to be – it was almost – and it's a harsher thing to say, but it was like Auburn finally got tools and realized that against A&M, we can throw it over the top. We can beat everybody downfield by these receivers. And all of a sudden, you have cornerbacks that are third, fourth-year starters going, Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend. You're going to have to actually run routes. Oh, and much less, there's defensive ends that can get to the quarterback. We did not run a single screen in that game. We've talked about all the pieces. Get those guys open in space.
My boy Malcolm hardly touched the field.
And that's one of the most electric guys on the field. I think that's the guy that gets overlooked when you look at the Freeze 4.
Absolutely.
But I think can make the most electricity from the standpoint of that slot position. He was the guy we went to the very first play of the game against Alabama A&M. That set the tone for everything. It was an RPO, and he came from the left side to the right and caught it almost like a tight end and picked up a first down on the very first play of the game.
I can't blame Hugh Freeze and this staff fully, because All of that being said, improved offensive line for what we thought, much improved receiver room, and a quarterback that Freeze trusted and continued to claim he gave him the tools and he wanted him to be successful. It would be hard not to put in all of this complex offense and all of these different looks and routes and different game plans because, man, if it works out, right, if you're Hugh Freeze going into the season, you're like, man, if this works out, we're going to be dang good. This is going to be a really good offense. But guess what, Hugh? It ain't working. Because the quarterback's not who you thought he was. And the offensive line is now banged up. And the receivers, as talented as they are, you've still got a dude who's a senior who can't catch the ball. You still have freshmen that are running good but not great routes, giving up at times. And the game plan was too difficult. Which brings me to a conversation that I think needs to be had that has not been had. I continue to hear this narrative of, well, maybe Hugh Freeze just knew that Auburn was more than a quarterback away. That's why he didn't go get somebody in the portal. That's why he didn't pay $1 million, Christian. Because Auburn was more than a quarterback away, and secretly Hugh Freeze knew it. Why, though?
Well, I don't think, and again, going back to that, something that we talked about, I don't disagree, first and foremost. I think Auburn is much more than a quarterback away
from
winning the SEC championship and trying to much less get a first-round bye, even make it to the now 12-team college football playoff. You saw there were many more pieces that needed to be filled. Hugh talks about it where you're going to have to start stacking classes onto themselves so that way, again, it feels like you can just continue to have guys flood in. But it just feels like there's a lot of emptiness right now. So much more than a quarterback away.
I go to, okay, even if you are more than a quarterback away, why is the mindset, well, to heck with this season, right? We'll just get them later. Why is it, if we can't win a championship with a quarterback now, we're just not going to get one, and we'll just take what the season gives us, and we'll hope to God that Peyton Thorne works out.
And much less than that, not even talking on the on-the-field side of things. How about the week leading up to the game? Yes, we're still a quarterback away, but we're also having to get over the fact of getting out-coached or getting out-schematic planned or whatever, to where there should never be Auburn didn't have the talent and just got absolutely blown out. But it could be we don't have the talent. We're not quite there yet, and that's understandable. But we're going to give you four quarters of hell, and we're going to make it to where
Yeah, and you see, and I want to reference basketball here for a second because you see that in college basketball so much, right? Yeah. It's like, look, we're on the road. We're at North Carolina, and we are Furman. And we understand that your starting five is better than our starting five. You're more athletic, you're more talented, you're better shooters, you're better physical. You have everything better than we do.
But we're going to find a way.
We're going to give you the effort, we're going to out-coach you, and we're going to try and out-scheme you, and we're going to try and come in here and get a win. And you've seen teams do that in college basketball. I think it's harder to do it in football in some terms because there's a lot more going on. But if you're Auburn, and as we saw Saturday, this roster's still not where it needs to be. Leaps and bounds above last year. Leaps and bounds. But even with the talent, yes, you're more than a quarterback away. And I can accept that. Yeah. I think a lot of Auburn fans can accept if you really sit back and let's look at this logically for a second. It is year one and two games for Hugh Freeze. We should probably lower our expectations, and we should have done that preseason.
Which is a very tough conversation to have.
It is, especially with the excitement that we built with the five straight home games and the ending of the season and all the talent. Like, it was very easy for us to buy into that and start talking 8, 9, 10 wins. I get that, and we were probably in the wrong there. But what I cannot accept is this team being out-coached, out-schemed, out-game-planned, out-prepared. Because this is not the first time that it's happened.
No.
And I cannot accept that as an Auburn fan.
And it's it just gets to the point where a conversation has to be had of at what point is it honestly going to change? Again, it was a Cal team that kind of had that same mindset, most likely, as that Furman going into North Carolina that you mentioned of, hey, we're going to find a way. We're going to find the weak spot. We're going to continue to hit it. We're going to continue to hit it until we find that weakness and we find the spot that we can continue to go to. But when it comes to continuously getting outcoached or your scheme is wrong, Auburn can be a good team this year. They will not be a great team this year. And they will not be an elite level team until that mindset changes. Because again, you hate to have the conversation, but a team like Georgia, they don't let stuff happen like this.
And it took time for that to get
there. It did. It did.
But in a building, and we're going to get to Ed on the phone lines really quickly here, but for a team that's still building and trying to get back to relevancy, and you have to understand and you know going into a lot of these games moving forward that you are less talented or you're not as talented as you'd like to be, it's those things that you can't let slip through. You can't let those things get by you because that's all you have. That's all you have is your preparation and your effort and your heart.
It felt like Auburn a couple years ago, and even early in the 2000s, when nobody gave Auburn a chance, and Auburn had that underdog mindset of it's Auburn versus everybody, it's Auburn versus the world. That was the time that Auburn came out and looked their best, when nobody in the world gave them a chance. And it feels like now you're almost at the point of, we're switching the narrative now, and the results are still the same.
Let's get to the phone lines quickly before we get to our final break. Ed, you're on the line, man. Good to hear from you.
Hey, guys. Hey, it's good talking with y'all. And, I'm not that kind of the person you were just talking about that's ready just to be that patient. Of course, I'm kind of kidding. As an Auburn fan, you've got to be patient.
Sure.
And but no, you the thing that it is just so disappointing to me that you have a lot of momentum going at Auburn. You have a lot of things going for you. You cannot just sit there and sit on Peyton Thorne. Yeah, listen, nobody except for Hugh Freeze cares what anybody looks like in practice. Nobody really cares except for maybe me and maybe you right now, because I'm talking to you, that what I thought, that, hey, it's evident that Peyton Thorne's not going to, get it done this past Saturday. But everybody, the boosters that are paying everything, they know it. I haven't heard anybody say yes. He should just have stayed with Peyton Thorne. Other than Hugh Freeze, I've heard no one say that. And Hugh Freeze is not in a position to be, listen about his, hey, it's not Kentucky Fried. It's a simple, you tell that to Jimbo Fisher in Texas A&M, that is a simple recipe you just put together 4 years and you're in the college, the Final Four. It's not that simple. You have to coach. You have to be imaginative. You have to be progressive in your thinking. You have to be saying, I've got to do something myself. Sit here and just, he is not in a position in any way what is Peyton Thorne shown anybody in the game? Can you tell me?
What, just in general? We may have lost you, Ed, but, man, you were getting after him. I love it. And I know where you were heading with that. Again, you were kind of breaking up on us there at the end. We appreciate you calling in. We got to get to our final break before the show wraps up. 334-321-1390. We're going to get one more phone call in as we wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Let's get to the phone lines one more time. Ty the Tiger, good to hear from you, my man. You got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. What's up?
Well, man, first of all, I know everybody's on the Peyton Thorne thing, and I just want to say I don't think as a head coach you can bench him today. I think you got to have the most shortest leash that you can possibly have on a starting quarterback in SEC play going into Arkansas. But, you know, look, Peyton's going to look like a Heisman Trophy winner this weekend versus New Mexico.
If he plays.
He just is. Those opponents is what when he looks like the Peyton we want him to. That's when that happens. When he gets against a Power Five, go look at his numbers against Power Five. It's amazing. Now, so that being said, when Arkansas rolls around, coach has got to ask himself, are you really wanting to struggle and go 7-5 with Peyton? Or are you going to go 5-7 with Hank Brown or Walter White? You know, I think the problem with a lot of people is, you know, if Walter White or Hank Brown was out there and this happened on Saturday, we could understand it. Guys, we're talking about a fifth-year senior, a four-year starter.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen with those guys. This is DJ in our back house. I don't know how to say his name, but anyway, this is the same thing going on with him. That's why this guy keeps transferring, because he's getting exposed, and everywhere he goes, Peyton is getting exposed by these Power 5 SEC defenses. Nobody on our roster, in my opinion, will be the quarterback next year. So I don't see why Hugh, I understand if he doesn't do it in New Mexico, but if we go down in Arkansas and it's because of a pick six or because of an interception that leads to a score, I don't see how Hugh Freeze cannot pull the trigger and put Peyton Thorne. Look at last year. Last year, Bama benched Jalen Milroe.
Yeah.
And he comes out looking like a Heisman Trophy candidate from then on out. I mean, the kid looked amazing. Sometimes benching somebody or putting somebody else in puts the spark that you need.
I'm with you.
Ty. I don't know the fixings, but let me tell you one thing. Wherever we find a quarterback, when you got to find some DBs too, we got burnt all
yep.
day.
You're right about that. Ty, great to hear from you, brother.
About the offensive line, guys. We're good. Hey, man, Borrego, as always.
Yes, sir. Great to hear from you, man. Always appreciate you listening. My phone has continued to blow up from the text box. I see all you guys. I promise we will get to those as much as we can tomorrow, and I'll respond to you guys offline. I mean, just everybody calling in has some sort of take, and I can find a way to agree with all of them.
I was about to say, it's hard.
I had three people just text me and agreeing with Ty right there.
Yeah, it's hard because – and that's why it felt like there could be 12 different voices talking to you, because you can agree with just about every single way that somebody decides to go.
Multiple ways to skin a cat, right? That's the old saying. Christian, always appreciate you, my man. Always a fun time to have you in the studio. You'll be in here on Friday. You're hosting on Friday with Uncle Tebow.
I know. I get the big chair.
Yeah.
Get to feel all important.
Yeah, good luck. Don't screw it up. Yep, Christian's back on Friday, him and Uncle Tebow, because I got to go to Enterprise Friday. We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. Appreciate everybody listening, calling, texting. You all are amazing, okay? I know it's not the circumstances we want, but we're having a lot of fun. And we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.